Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. I'm Greg Hahn, President of Winthrop Capital Management. With me is Adam Kunz. He's head of trading at Winthrop Capital Management. Right. Outside on portfolios. And we have a special guest today again, Tim Bond, joining us from Columbus, Ohio. Tim, are you there?
Morning. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Tim, we're going to talk about some credit stuff. But before we get into that, let me just unpack a few things to kind of set the table for investment strategy in the first quarter. And then we'll talk about what's going on in the markets. But here's what we know. Let's break this down into what we know and what we don't know. We do know we have a new president with a new agenda. And then President-elect Biden also unveiled last week his $1.9 trillion stimulus plan. And that's on top of the $900 billion that Congress passed in December. So we've got massive fiscal stimulus coming, which we expect is going to help small business and consumers over the next 4 to 6 months. We expect this is going to be a backstop for the capital markets. And so even though we're going to talk about valuations are going to look really stretched. But history shows whenever you have aggressive monetary stimulus and fiscal stimulus, that financial assets perform well. So that's kind of the baseline. We know that we have a coronavirus that is a global problem. It's impacting economic growth in both developed and emerging economies. So we expect to see slower economic growth in most of the world, except for China. We'll talk about that also. We also have a growing debt problem. So $21.6 trillion in debt, which is, relative to GDP, we're over 100% now of debt to GDP. But the debt is being used to fund the budget deficits, which have been a necessity, apparently, because of the...
Right.
And I don't mean to sound like I'm dismissive or minimizing it, but the debt is being used to support the economy so that we can mute the downturn. That's an important element, and that's different from other cyclical downturns, with the exception of 2008, where we also had aggressive fiscal monetary stimulus. So this is a new form of support for the economy and for business, and so it's an important piece of it. But the stimulus comes at a cost, and that's the rising debt burden. We also have a form of structural unemployment right now. We got 10 million people unemployed. Unemployment rate 6.7%. Some people would look at that and say, "Oh, that's not so bad." The challenge, though, is we've got 10 million people that are out of work that need to be put back to work. We expect they'll get put back to work quicker than what we saw after the financial crisis, where it took almost 4 years for the economy to create the jobs. Because this is isolated in the service, leisure, travel sectors, that once we get the vaccine implemented and we've got some stability in the virus, in the spread of the virus, we're hopeful that's our base case, that we'll see improvement in the employment picture. So here's what we don't know. We've got a deterioration taking place in the credit of state and local municipal governments. So we expect to see some negative impact in municipal credit in 2021. It has not really surfaced yet, but we had heavy issuance to support the funding gaps in the fourth quarter of last year, just to keep municipalities working. We know Europe is in a mess. So Europe's economy is locked down again to control the spread of the virus. So the ECB the ECB is buying bonds similar to the United States. So that's helped their monetary policy is helping to support low interest rates. But we think the consequences in Europe are going to be more severe. And it's really focused on Italy. Italy's, I think they have another vote in their government today for it's not a confidence vote, but it'll lead to a confidence vote. So we got Italy's the kind of the canary in the coal mine over in Europe. So we're watching that. China's the bright spot in global growth. We always kind of scratch our heads with the numbers, but the Chinese economy is growing from what we can tell. However, the delisting of China shares that are associated with the military here in the United States, the delisting that took place in the United States it makes it more difficult for U.S. investors to get diversified exposure of China. So we're working through that. That's kind of an unknown right now. So why don't I stop there? Because the list could keep going. That's kind of a setting the strategy for what we're doing. I'm going to turn it over to Adam, and then we want to pull Tim into this discussion also. But go ahead, Adam. What's on your plate today?
Well, like I said, you hit the nail on the head with China and the fact that, you know, they're kind of the first big economy to get back to pre-COVID GDP levels on an absolute basis. The U.S. still has quite a bit to go, and Europe is the obvious train wreck. So just one place we're looking at there is, you know, how to continue to add China to our portfolio structure. Last quarter, we added KWEB to the portfolio, which is largely Chinese technology companies, which were all deemed to be safe from delisting. So that was the main thing I wanted to bring up, was that, you know, Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, those were all removed from the potential removal from listing on the New York Stock Exchange. So,
and how did the stocks perform last week?
They were up. So with the overall market somewhat down, they actually outperformed. So you're seeing
some recovery there. So I know our Tencent position is definitely in the money. And then on the Alibaba, we still have
Baba's still got about 10% to go.
And then our desire would probably be to add, if we saw a downturn, we would add to it, but they're both right now kind of positioned where we want them to be in the portfolio.
Yeah, we've been incrementally adding as we've seen deterioration. So I think the position size right now is probably pretty good.
What are you seeing in interest rates now?
So interest rates took a small increase last week. So the 10-year is at a 113. But overall, rates and spreads last week were pretty muted. Didn't really change a whole lot. Really, the big thing is, you know, you're seeing heavy issuance on the new issue market. If it's investment grade, there's zero concession because there's so much demand. There's a lot of cash on the sidelines. So really, any spread whatsoever gets bought up. We did see some COVID-affected industries, come with some triple C-rated debt. Lifetime Fitness was one of those examples, which just was gross to me. It came at 6%. Macau gaming companies come in the 8% range. So
and double B's are coming at 3.25%.
Right. There's a big difference between double B's.
I remember when my money market fund used to earn 3.25%.
Yeah.
Let's talk about earnings. So Tim, we're on the kind of the front end of earnings. The banks have been releasing. What do you guys, Tim, and Adam, what are you seeing in earnings right now? Tim, let's start with you.
Yeah. For the banks, I mean, we're seeing a lot of reserve releases. A lot of that, the banks are looking forward to 2021, and they're basically releasing some of the reserves that they built up in 2020 due to just better economic results. Specifically, JP Morgan, I think, released $1 billion from its credit card reserves. So they're definitely seeing some good pay down trends there. If the bank had larger investment banking revenues, it did better during the fourth quarter. And that was due to the IPO market. Just to give you some context, in October alone, there were close to 100 IPOs. And that basically would beat some years. If you look back to 2016, there were 133 IPOs. So just a very hot IPO market. So if you had a good investment bank, you did well.
So on specifically on earnings, we had PNC last week, JP Morgan, and Citi released, right, last week?
Yeah.
All of them had earnings release, reserve releases. And for some of them, it kind of made Wells Fargo kind of propped up earnings. But it's a trend. Bank America released this morning. Goldman Sachs knocked the cover off the ball. I don't know if you saw those earnings, but are you concerned, Tim, with the earnings with the reserve release? And yet we're still not really through the whole COVID affected portfolios for these banks.
No, and the way to think about it is a lot of that's out because of the financial regulations and then how they are supposed to disclose this. A lot of this is out of control of the banks themselves, and so it can fluctuate pretty dramatically from quarter to quarter depending on what the economic fundamentals kind of say in their models. So a lot of it you just kind of have to average out over time. So from quarter to quarter, it's not that big of a deal for the banks.
So Goldman is interesting. I don't know if you saw their earnings this morning, but it looked like they were about $12.08 a share versus what was expected at $7.31 a share. I mean, that was a huge beat. But the shift, Goldman's unique because it's shifting from an investment banking firm into more of a middle market traditional banking business that's been very successful over the last, they've been at it now really for 10 years, but it looks like it's really getting traction. So I think that's an interesting.
Yeah, I agree. And Tim, you hit on it, the fact that, most of the banks that had some larger investment banking and trading parts of their portfolio did really well. The one that did not was Wells Fargo, where they saw equity trading down 25%. Fixed income was really flat year over year. Can you speak to what's going on there and why they had such a different story than other banks?
And how many kitchen sink quarters? They're out of kitchen sinks to throw out.
Yeah, they've got some restrictions due to, you know, the problems they had in 2015, 2016. And they're really trying to, I mean, they've got 500 plans in place internally to kind of fix their cost structure. Their cost structure is still out of whack with the other banks. And so they need to kind of reset. And they'll do that over time. But it's interesting. If you look at their earnings report, they look exactly like J.P. Morgan. And so Charlie Sharp's trying to basically use that, the JP Morgan model, to kind of turn around Wells Fargo. So we'll see. But yeah, definitely different than the other banks, but not bad, just different, definitely a turnaround story there.
So I know we're not scripted today on European banks, but the European banks are a concern because they're funding their liabilities through wholesale deposits, not retail necessarily. And there's a lot of buying of sovereign debt onto European bank balance sheets. So as the deterioration occurs in Europe, it is compounded in the banking system because of the exposure that the banks have, as an example, to Italy's sovereign debt. And they're buying this debt at really, really low yields. So something we should come back on this quarter is the European exposure. And what's going on, what we expect to happen with European banks over the next several years, because they don't look like upgrade candidates at this point.
No. Yeah, to your point, Greg, I mean, I have looked at a few of them there. And to your point, I mean, they do have, say, if you're a Spanish bank, you do have exposure to loans that are now being affected by COVID. But then you also have exposure to the sovereign, right? So they have Spanish debt. And they do hedge some of that, but yeah, they're going to probably work with regulators to try to kind of navigate this, but it is a concern and we'll have to monitor it closely.
Hey, I want to shift a little bit. One of the things that we've done in our investment strategies is start to use equally weighted benchmarks alongside traditional market weighted benchmarks. So as an example, the S&P 500, we've pulled along Invesco's RSP, ticker RSP,
yeah,
which is their equally weighted index. How has that performed, Adam?
So over the last 3 months, it actually had almost doubled the return of the S&P 500. So as we were kind of hitting year end, for the fourth quarter, the S&P was up 8.5%. The RSP was up 16%.
And what we're trying to do is really mitigate the large tech, the large cap risk that exists in these. So
sure.
For the S&P 500, it's Apple, Amazon, Microsoft.
Yeah, which those all underperformed in the fourth quarter after a great run, obviously. But yeah, you've got, you know, they call it the big six now. You can see all these different acronyms or whatever. But you know, they make up over 25% of the S&P right now. So that is good when the market is going up and those companies are doing well, but a quick deterioration in index performance just based off of those few companies.
Right. And investors, this is the challenge, is that investors have embedded assumptions. All of us have embedded assumptions. And if the embedded assumption is that the S&P 500 is a diversified index, we want to just sound the alarm that it is a concentration risk that we haven't really seen in this form before. And so in the consumer discretionary sector specifically, which you would normally think of as Walmart, Home Depot, Nike.
Right.
Right.
What do you got? You got over 45% is made up of Amazon and Tesla. I would continue to argue are technology companies.
And Tesla just recently added to the index is up, what, 800%?
Yeah.
In 2010. So we got... this was plopped into our portfolio. So we have to recognize that we've got this risk now, and how do we manage it? So in our core sector models, we started to use an equally weighted index ETF alongside of the traditional a sleeve. And that's really designed to help to manage the risk of Tesla and Amazon. And I mean, it's just, we just have to manage the risk right now. We don't have to necessarily accept that this is what the S&P is right now, and let's go beat it like we did in 1995. So it's just a different animal.
I mean, some of it's just playing defense, right? I mean, at this point, with, like you said, Tesla up 100%, Amazon up over 100%.
I think in 1997, Exxon was the biggest company. It was $400 billion, and it was the biggest company in the S&P 500. So the world has changed
a little bit,
right? Energy now is under 2.5% of the S&P 500. Right. So
and that's where the bigger rally.
Tim, anything else on your plate?
No, sir.
All right. And then Adam, how about you?
Here.
Any closing comments? Be careful out there. So thank you for listening, and we will talk with you through the week. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.